So you want to get started in music licensing, but you also want to make music income. What do you do? What are the action steps to get income coming in from licensing as fast as possible? Everyone says that sync licensing is such a huge, long game, but what if you don't want it to be? What do you do to get it going a little faster? Oh, what to do? Well, welcome to episode 87 of the Make Music Income podcast, where we talk about all kinds of ways to make music income, all kinds of things, including sync licensing, micro sync licensing for YouTube, music publishing and royalties, and much, much more. My name is Eric Copeland, and I have had a long path to profitability, and I'm still working on that, trying to figure out the fastest way to music licensing profitability. And I can't say with absolute certainty that I am profitable. I don't even know yet. I would have to do some forensic science. But certainly my partner today is rolling, or as I typed it first, roiling in the dough due to his music licensing success. Ladies and gentlemen, our old friend and podcast partner, Mr. Stevie B. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm just taking myself off mute here. Crazy noise going in the background. I'm doing good, man. It's good to be back on the podcast. And you know, it's funny. I was thinking, don't worry about profitability because Spotify is still not profitable. You know, you just need investors.
Yeah,
you just need to raise the stock price, and you're all good.
Just Patreon followers price. Will do it. Patreon followers and start your own thing. Well, yeah, today's show, we're going to try to outline some action steps, what we would do to make a beeline to profit if we had it maybe to do all over again. You know what I mean? If we were just going to start again, knowing what we know now versus how we just both probably stumbled to where we are, you know, just trying to figure out one thing or another. I kind of had a plan, but anyway, that's what we're going to talk about today. But first, let's see what we've been up to this week in our goal to get those profits up. Steve, what has your week been like?
It's been good. What have I been doing? I finished up a major production project for the city of Vancouver.
Wow.
Which is like basically a trailer remixing project. That was a lot of work, and that's off my plate, which is good. Today I'm working on some Logic track templates for the Production Music Academy courses, specifically the lo-fi and the synthwave courses. I had one of my favorite sample library developers reach out to me yesterday to send me a new product that I'm going to review next week, I think. And
that's cool.
It's so cool. By the way, start a YouTube channel, everybody. It's great because people send you free stuff and sometimes it's really, really cool. And it's like really useful. I'm like, nice. I would have paid for this. But instead I get it sent for free, which is such a privilege. And, you know, in exchange for a review on the YouTube channel, which is, I think, a pretty fair one.
I'm still waiting.
So I'm excited about that.
Native Instruments to send me the S88 Mark III to review. I've emailed them several times and to no avail.
So. Yeah, the big companies are that they don't really need the reviews. I think it's like this. It's the up and comers that need like the views on their new products and stuff. And some of the new guys coming up are just really cool.
Cool.
But yeah, what else is going on? I have two more tracks to complete for my current Artlist Originals brief, which is going to take the rest of the week to finish. Working with my friend Dan on some lo-fi tracks. He works with a sync library called Media Tracks based in the UK. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be pitching some lo-fi stuff to them. What else? One of the production companies that I'm working with is going to pitch some of my back catalog to a non-exclusive library that's starting to do buyouts. Not Artlist, not Epidemic. I actually don't know who they are yet. And I'm not sure if that'll work out something, but there are other buyout contracts out there other than Artlist and Epidemic. There are, but I actually don't really know of that many, but it'd be cool to figure out where they're coming from. Also working on some new products for Production Music Tools and the Academy. Got some new courses, sample packs, some live stream composing plans coming up. And for once in my life, dude, I am actually ahead of schedule with planning my Black Friday stuff. Like this, the last 2 years, I've just done it like the day before. But, I'll do a sale. And I'm actually getting organized a whole month in advance, and I'm going to plan out a bunch of exciting deals and whatnot. So that's got me pumped. Black Friday is going to be an exciting one.
This is both year. For your production academy and music production tools?
Yeah, exactly. The courses, the MIDI pack, sample pack, everything will go. We'll have like a series of sales and stuff like that. So hopefully generate some new interest in it and excitement. And like I said, in previous years, just been so disorganized going into it. And I think it's really important if you're running a company, especially like one that's going to have Black Friday deals, then you got to be on the ball with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I was watching your video yesterday and you talked about your two online companies. You mean the Production Music Academy and Music Production Tools, right?
Yeah. They're two very different things. There's a little bit of crossover, but cool. They both require my attention in different capacities.
So by the way, today's podcast is brought to you by Production Music Academy and Music Production Tools. And I'll put both of those down in the links below. So cool.
Thanks, man.
Sure. My pleasure. Everybody should be there. My week has been pretty good so far. Some odd things and some good things. I got back to the Drumline album I've been working on for a library of college football thing. I put it aside while I was finishing Christmas albums for two different libraries, and those were fun, kind of like dramedy and Christmas kind of put together. And then another one was more like Target commercial Christmas, and so I delivered both of those. We'll see if anything happens with that this Christmas. I'm hoping that because of the strikes, that there is a little bit of like throw stuff together at the last minute, music wise. They need stuff and they got to pull from libraries, or there's a push from some of these things. So we'll see.
I thought that they're figuring it out. No, I thought there was a deal on the table.
Well, there's a deal for the writers to finish their deal. They're good.
Okay.
Now I haven't heard about the actors. I haven't looked at the news lately, so I don't know about the actors, but, I don't know. We'll see what happens. You mentioned live composing. I did some live beat making and composing yesterday as I was working on this Drumline stuff. I just decided to go live and see what happened. And it actually is kind of cool. You've done it before, right? You've done this kind of thing.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, it's been a little while. I've been meaning to. I'm trying to plan out one. And it's nice to go into them a little bit prepared, obviously. Like, I don't want to. If I was to just turn on the recording for like my regular, composing process, it would be so boring to watch it.
That's what I thought. Everybody comes like, Eric, we'd love to see you when you're working on stuff. I'm like, would you? Why?
Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I think. I'm like, I don't know if you would.
Why would you want
to
watch
it? It's nice
to
be prepared. I want to be prepared going into a live composing stream.
I guess usually. At least I want to know that there are things on that particular song that I know I need to work on, and I'll tell them why I've held off to work on it until this point, at this point in the thing. But apparently people really loved it. The guy sent me a super chat. I mean, I was like, what? And so I thought that was cool. And so I did that, and I might do this every Wednesday just to see how it goes. You know me, I just do new stuff all the time. And just see what sticks and see if people like it. Especially because I talk so much about music income, people wonder if I actually make music at all. And they, like with both of us, they don't see behind the curtain and how much we are just hammering away every day at songs. All they see is this is the way I do things and this is the way money I made. But they don't see us sitting here working all morning. I've kind of gotten to the point now where I split my day up into morning is for music. As long as I'm motivated to do it, morning is for music. And after at noon, I switch over and do client/video things. So that's working pretty well because it kind of like puts me in the mood. And I heard another guy talking. I've been listening to Jay Klaus a little bit recently, who does creator science. I don't know if you've listened to his podcast or stuff, but he's got a really cool kind of channel. And he talks about having certain days he does certain things. And I don't know if that would work for me. This one works for me. Doing music in the morning and then doing everything else in the afternoon seems to work fine.
That's usually how it works for me too. Yeah. I'm a morning guy.
So I'm also editing a really good video about sync licensing and the other side of sync that we don't talk about that much, which is direct sync, and with somebody, and you know who I'm talking, you know who she is that I'm talking about, who is, I'm billing this as a three-round fight between me and her about, you know, being a person who does stuff through music libraries and doing music direct. And we're going to talk about a little bit of that today in trying to get that together. And we're definitely going to talk about that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about that. Sure. Let's see, what else? I've been working on my stock market course. I'm just about to finish it. I've been pre-selling it this whole time, and it's been selling. And so I'm about to just to finish it, all the editing, and then it'll be at its full price, and then I'll start all the sales for it, the regular sales, and that'll probably be something that I put on a Black Friday sale at some point. I am working on a new teaching community, as we were talking about before we got on air, and some people are going to be testing it out here soon. Really a place that I don't want to say it's taking the place of the Discord, although it kind of is a little bit for some people. There are people who just don't prefer to go to the Discord. So this is going to be for them. It's going to be free mostly. And then it'll have some things people can get into if they want to. But I hope to do some teaching there, and with a long-term goal of that becoming the main place I teach, just as far as online or offline. That's the main place that I'm doing my teaching. That's where I hope to be. And you've made that transition, I know, and I think that's kind of what I want to do as well. I have a new artist who is paying very well that I'm doing consulting for, and we just got off a call, and he is just that guy works it, and he's going to do very well. I just did a takeoff video on Monday that was kind of fun called Do Not Stock, which is a takeoff of Jesse's Do Not Sync videos that he's been putting out recently. And I checked with him first. I didn't want to like rip his idea off. And he said, no, go ahead. It sounds like fun. And so, and you know, he has nothing to do with stock music. So it was kind of fun. It was absolutely the snarkiest video I've ever done. I don't know if there's been a snarkier one than that one. And then tomorrow I've got a call for a taping of a podcast with Dave Croft, our friend Dave, and we're going to be talking about orchestration, which is something that I'm on about right now. After especially doing so much dramedy and stuff lately, you know, I am all just in my head about the bassoon and the ranges of the flutes and just orchestration in general is very exciting to me right now. And to be honest, I think it's one of those things that, and I tell my students this, if we are serious about staying in business for the next 20 years as musicians, we're going to have to be able to do things and know things that are not going to be easy things for AI and programs to do. I think there's going to still be a need for humans who do really good things. And one of those things, I think, is orchestrating and classical music. Not that AI can't develop that, but you know what I'm saying, is doing some of these things that are a little bit more skill-based and less dragging-based. You know, there's nothing wrong with dragging a loop in and using it if you're going to cut it up and work with it and do different things with it. But a few too many students that I have just drag and drop their music, including just dragging a beat that they just bought and saying, look what I made. And they really didn't make anything.
Yeah, well, I can see AI getting pretty good with like with manipulating MIDI faster than it is going to be with like actually, manipulating audio. I don't know. I could be totally wrong about that. But it'd be cool to get some help with the MIDI. And in terms of just like an educational thing, like seeing how, chords get properly orchestrated for like an orchestral mock-up or something like that. That'd be kind of cool if AI could help with that. I think it probably could, but yeah, I mean, in terms of taking that MIDI and then transforming it into like a really, compelling piece of audio. It's a big process. So I don't know.
I'm not officially doing a news section today on the podcast, but I do have some breaking news. So absolutely have some breaking news here that about AI. Can you hear that? Can you hear my news?
Yeah, it's okay. It's coming through. It sounds like it's coming through your speakers or something.
Okay, no. Yeah, I got an email this week from Crucial. You know, every library is sending out an email about where we stand with AI. And
oh yeah, what did they say?
They said that while they don't have anything against AI, they said they don't want anything to do with it, basically. They said, do not send us anything made with AI, with AI tools, which is just really an extension of do not send us stuff with samples, do not send us stuff with, you know, that kind of stuff that you've bought off a sample library. Make sure you are making original music for us. And anything with AI, we will reject out of hand, which is not that crazy with Crucial because they reject most things anyway.
Saying that they have a thing against samples too, like with like Splice or something like that.
Oh, dude, most libraries do. My BMG library has gotten to the point where they say no samples at all, to the point where they want us to only use their samples. Libraries are now coming up with their own samples for you to use because they don't want you using Splice in any way unless they can't tell it's Splice. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah, I get that.
They can't tell it. And all they know is that, that it sounds good. And because if they hear the bare track and it's because they're going to get stems, and if they get a stem, that's just a loop from some library, then they're not going to be happy. And they don't, and their clients have been, saying they're getting content ID things, they're getting having problems with getting those loops like recognized. And so they're telling all the writers, and I'm hearing this from all the libraries, do not send us, do not be using Splice and then sending us a stem that's just a Splice loop. And so they're being very, very careful with that now. And it's a thing, certainly is a thing. Mm-hmm. And so we're definitely dealing with that now. And it's making its way. Now AI, I think, is going to be the next thing because a lot of people are using AI tools to create. And so that's a thing that they are trying to kind of get away from. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into what we want to talk about today. And what we want to talk about today is the fastest way to profitability inside of music licensing. And, you know, this is something that kind of came up. No, there wasn't a question about this, but a lot of people, it just seemed like something... We haven't really touched on this before. We've touched about what you could do, what you can do, where you should start and stuff like that. But I think what I wanted to do in this episode is really figure out if we had to start again, knowing what we know now, of course, you know, it could all change tomorrow, but let's just say knowing what we knew, how would we get to this point faster than we got to it as far as making income? Now I know you, have gotten to a place where you are, dude, your stack, just listen to your amount of work. You know, I know you've got a lot of things going on. And before we get into this, where would you say you are right now with percentage wise? And we ask this question all the time, but this will help. As far as music pay that's coming in pretty consistently versus all the other music incomes you have, including teaching and things like that.
Like, say,
percentage,
like, where am I percentage wise in terms of, like, if I took like the academy and like the courses out of the equation?
Yeah. Well, no, if as part of your income, how much, at what percentage is music licensing money that's coming in monthly, a percentage of your income, would you say right now?
So
are we at 50%?
So it's hard to say, right? Because well, for one thing, like one of the biggest payouts that I get is from Artlist, which is a yearly thing. So until I know what that's going to be,
you never know what it's going to be, right?
No, you never know what it's going to be. It's been progressively more every year, but I've only been working with I've only had two annual payouts from Artlist. This will be my third one coming up at the end of December.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it'll be higher than the previous two, just because the amount of downloads has exceeded the previous 2 years, like by a large margin. This year was really good. So Motion Array's taken a hit for me this year. Like, I haven't really been sending them stuff, so that will kind of counter that payment. But it's still been okay, you know, like no complaints. I think percentage wise, it's like I said, it's difficult to say. And then you have, I make most of my money off of like production work, like actual,
work for clients,
buyouts, work for clients. Yeah. So like that's really where the most of my income comes from. And then it's kind of like supplemented by the monthly payouts from Motion Array and then the annual payouts from Artlist. But gotcha. It's hard to say what the percentage is. I make less from the academy and the courses than I do from all the production work.
But there we go. So that's the majority of what you're making is.
Yes.
Is that.
It's a majority. It's not an overwhelming majority, but it's probably like, 60% of my annual income. Okay. Yeah.
So I am taking a much longer route towards, you know, full-time music income from licensing because I still work for so many clients. Now, some of that is I'm writing for them, but that's a whole different deal when you're writing for hire. I guess it's not too much different from what you do, but I also do a lot of services inside that, including consulting. And then I have other incomes from teaching. But what are my goal for people in this episode is to kind of find out how do we, because they hear us talking, it's a long road. It's going to be a long road. You got to wait for these royalties and all that kind of stuff. But what if you didn't? What if you could get to where we are making some money? How would you get there the fastest? I know what I'd say, but I think I'm going to just start off saying, first of all, before, because somebody, I guess this was really pushed on me because someone asked me the other day in a phone call, how do I start making money with music licensing? And I was like, well, you know, and knowing full well that this person was in one of my masterminds and he had just started writing songs. And I'm like, dude, the first thing you're going to need before you can even think about approaching a library or approaching a person to sell songs is you got to have songs. And I think when I decided to get into music licensing, the smartest thing that I did was started stockpiling some highly produced songs in a genre that I knew I was going to pitch to a library for the first time with real players, with high-end engineers and real recording in Nashville and other places. And then my solo piano stuff, which was very melodic and very, that's not hard to have high quality when you have good samples. And so those were the two things I used to get into licensing at first. And I think if I hadn't had that, I mean, there's really no other first step. You got to have music first. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the long haul like is writing music that is really, really powerful and exceptionally high quality. That's the long game. So I think if you were to just start off at a point where you're writing really, really great music, like things are going to happen really quickly. I think if you start from that point, and as long as you're putting effort into putting yourself out there, which I think is the other half of the game, it's just putting yourself out there and pushing your music to as many corners of the world and online as you can, then I think if you're writing great music, things will happen pretty quickly. And I don't know what quickly actually means, but I don't know. I mean, we talk a lot about how long it takes to build up like performance royalties and stuff like that. And, you know, people say like five years plus, you know, to start making actual like significant income from back end placements and stuff like that with the sync game. But I think that if you're interested in doing like, you know, if you're open to some of the income opportunities that we're going to talk about today and you're actively, you know, putting yourself out there as much as you can, and you're writing great music, then things can happen very, very quickly.
And this isn't necessarily a, 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 a podcast or a subject about just making money for someone who wants you to make some, making money for someone who wants you to write or compose something or make music for a thing. We're specifically focusing on music licensing here. So this probably doesn't even take into account radio jingles and things like this. This is more, we're trying to talk about licensing, about making money for someone to put into a thing where someone uses it and then pays you. And then there's royalties involved as well, maybe, or content ID. You know, I think either one we're talking about.
Well, if we're talking about sync licensing, like, and getting placements and stuff, like, there's really no way to get fast returns from that. I mean, it's just basically impossible just because of the way that the system works. But I think if we're looking at, like, say you pitched a, you know, a 5-song thing to Motion Array, I mean, and one of them did really well in the library, or a library similar to Motion Array, like Storyblocks or something, you can start seeing returns on that pretty quickly if the track, you know, does well on the library, because of the way that that system's set up to pay their authors monthly or quarterly or whatever. With sync royalties, you just have to, you know, we're dealing with this ridiculously long system of, like, performance royalties having to be assessed, and then, you know, magical numbers are being crunched in the periphery, in the background, that we don't really even understand. Yeah, and yeah, then someday, a year later, you get a, like, a number on your statement.
So, which is why I don't want to start with sync. I want to start with something that might be faster. And that, I think that is going to be things that have to deal with microsync. I mean, I think you should start them both at the same time. I believe on this channel, you should be doing as many music things as you can do. You should be doing, if you like to do gigs, you should be doing gigs. If you want to do licensing, you should be doing all these things. But I think the microsync side, what has been called the stock music side or non-exclusive music side, is probably a faster path towards some music income much faster. So if, for instance, with me, I put up all my highly produced, like, jazz music and stuff that I already had in 2021, like in January. And when I got into Motion Array in March, it started just making dollars per day. And of course, that was a different time for Motion Array, is the way they paid. But by mid-year, I was making $500, $600 a month with some of those libraries. But then again, I had, like, pre-made music that was that I wasn't going to be putting into sync libraries. I just knew I just had it. And so I just put it up, and some of that music's just started to sell and do well and make money that I could see. If I put it in today, a month from now, I could start seeing sales and even maybe a check if the dates fell right onto the 15th and I got a payment on the 15th. You could literally put something in of the 15th of a month, it get accepted by a library and get enough sales that you get paid a month later. And I think that's the fastest way, but probably still not the fastest, because if you decided not to get into, you put your stuff in Pond 5 and Motion Array, but you also got into Artlist Originals, which I'll let you talk about here in a minute, that's even a faster upfront money. Talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, well, just to make the distinction between that and, like, and royalties, because that's not royalties, it's just direct payouts.
No, I'm just talking about music licensing income.
If we're putting that under the licensing umbrella, then, I mean, you can make that is absolutely if you pitched an Artlist Originals and they decide they want to buy you out, that could all happen extremely quickly, you know? Yeah. But it comes back to having to write great music. I mean, I have a lot of people, unfortunately, reach out to me and say, hey, like, you know, I got turned down by Artlist. They have a very, very high standard of quality. I mean, it's gone up, I think, in the time that I've, I don't think they would have accepted my original tracks that I sent them. Like, you know, their standard is very, very high. Yeah. So, you know, part of what I do in the Academy is trying to, because a lot of people, you know, are there to figure out how to get on Artlist and libraries like it, is for me to just kind of give them very pointed critiques about what exactly needs to happen with the music in order for that to happen. So I think that's, like I said, that's the long haul. That's the tough thing, is getting your music to that level.
And I think,
but, yeah,
what would fall alongside that would be if you new or got in with, not Artless Originals, let's say, but any other company that was going to need music for licensing purposes, whether it's advertising, whether it is a video game, whether it is the city of Vancouver, whatever it is, they're wanting to use your music for a licensing type use, or they're licensing your music, or they're buying it out. Let's just, buyouts would be the next fastest way, because if you're making something for someone, now that's getting more towards client work rather than it is licensing. But
well, that's what I mean. That's what I was saying earlier. You know, we'd have to make that distinction because it's not really licensing. But but the buyouts are coming from a company that works in licensing. So I guess it's, you know,
it's a bit gray. But I think Artless Originals is, because there's still royalties to be made on that for you, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was just going to say, is that there's still, you can still collect on performance royalties and streaming royalties. That's embedded into the deal as well.
So anything you would have done to get to this place faster, had you known about this? Of course, Artless Originals didn't exist, 3 years ago? It didn't even, was it even a thing 3 or 4 years ago?
I don't know, actually. I don't know if they had the program in place when I started working with them. I didn't hear of it until about a year after I started working.
I didn't even hear about Audio Jungle until, three years ago. And you knew about it back in the teens, and Daniel knew about it before that. And people figured out that was a way, and Pond5 as well was another big one that people found out about 10 years ago. And I didn't know about that. So I guess it all depends on when you find out about this particular licensing income and decide, oh, that's something that sounds interesting to me. But I guess we all have to evolve to the place that we are making quality enough music to get into these things. But at this point in time, the purpose of this video is, now that we know Artless Originals exists, and if you were just coming into this, and let's say you already made the music that you make, you're a good music maker, and you're a live musician and an artist, and you put out your own stuff on Spotify, the fastest way, do you think, would be to try to apply to Artless Originals and see if you could get in, or to Artlist in general and see if you could get in, and to Motion Array and see if you could get in? Do you think that might be the fastest way to get into some kind of licensing at this point?
Well, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be Artlist. I mean, I think about it a lot. Like, what would I do? What would I do if you took Artlist, Emotion Ray, and like the Academy, like off my plate, and like I had to start from scratch? Yeah. But I still had the skills, you know. Like, I what would I do to like get in the game as quickly as possible? And if I had to start all over from scratch, like, I'd be doing two things. I'd be splitting my time equally between writing a lot of music and pitching it anywhere and everywhere I could. You know, there is other companies out there that are doing buyouts. I just spoke to someone over the phone the other day, that a guy I met from Toronto who's got buyouts coming from a totally different company, and he's doing it full time. So I would also have like detailed spreadsheets of like every person and company that I was pitching to, where I'd be taking note of like the time at which I got in touch with them, when they responded, if they responded. Plus, I would be in like all of the communities. I'd be making connections, making friends, being active, taking part in challenges, opportunities to pitch and to learn about new libraries, and just generally kind of trying to put myself out there as much as possible. That would be a huge chunk of my time. The rest of it would be spent composing.
That's exactly what I did. When I got into Sync, I still have those spreadsheets, and I would say, okay, this date I sent this guy this, I sent this place this, I sent this place this, and I just went through. I think I used Jesse's Sync licensing book directory thing, and I just used that and went through it and started sending stuff out. And I got no, and I'd put no, and I put yes, or maybe, or whatever, and get back to them later with more stuff, or not the right kind of stuff. And so I did all that. Now, that was for Sync. And there are a few other things I wanted to touch on before we leave this kind of non-exclusive area here, where you're not ever going to get into signing things. Either it's a buyout, and you know it's a buyout, or it's a non-exclusive thing where you can let them license it and you can still hold on to it and pitch it to somebody else if you want to. But we'll get more into that in a minute. But Song Trader is another place that I've made hundreds and hundreds, if not over a few thousand there over the past 5 years. I started that before I even got into any kind of, before I knew about even stock music licensing. I was in SongTrader making some money. And then mid-tiers, we talked about Artlist, but there's a bunch of Artlist type companies out there, MusicVine and Bedtrax and all these different Music Bed and all these different places that are very Artlist like and hard to get into.
There's ones that I don't even know. I'm still learning about that are, you know, they might not have the same recognition and brand power that Artlist does, but they have a lot of connections. They're doing a lot of things, you know? So there's other libraries out there. There's so many of them. I can only keep track of what's going on
and you're serving the ones
about the whole thing, you know?
And we're serving the ones that we're already in. So it takes time to serve them. So
exactly. Like this dude I was talking to the other day, he told me about this library, you know, like they're in, he's working full time. They're doing buyouts. And I'm just like, I'd never even heard of them, you know?
All right, so let's move from here into what everybody would like to get towards is more into the film and television world and advertising world of what we call sync, other people call production music, whatever you want to call it. And I think there is a super fast way. If you come in with great songs, let's say you're an artist and you are a great hip hop artist and you come in with very high end hip hop stuff made, it's clean. It's not over. I guess it doesn't matter if it's clean or not. There are shows that are going to, it seems like there's more R-rated shows on Netflix than there are any other rated shows. So you come in with some great, highly produced music and you can go direct to the music buyers and get your own deal straight through. And you don't even necessarily have to give up any kind of perpetuity or even have them hold it. One of my library's just came up and said, we're going to start being a sync agency, but it's a 2-year deal. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me because it seems like it should be like a non-exclusive deal if it's a sync agency, because most sync agents I know deal with that. We'll get to sync agents in a minute. But right now, talking about, let's say you come in with songs and you do make those things. And we're not talking buyouts necessarily. We're talking directly a deal with a music supervisor, directly a deal with an advertising company, directly a deal with a marketing company who is going to find a place for these songs. And they take a small cut of whatever the film or company pays for that use. But then you're getting any back-end royalties that there are 100% writers and publishing. And to me, that's the fastest way to get to sync is to make that direct deal.
Yeah, well, the upfront fees can be considerably higher for those types of things, for those types of deals. The only thing is that you're often competing. It's like a cattle call for, you know, a lot of composers will get this brief. It's worth like $3,000 if you get this placement plus like back end or whatever. And then you got like tons of people pitching to it. Chances are not good that you're going to get the actual brief, but there's a lot of composers who just take these briefs on constantly and they're constantly pitching. And then that they get that like 1 in 20 or whatever.
$5,000
it's like good money
here, 10 grand here.
Yeah.
And then they don't have to do that. So I've heard Ari Hirstand talk about his wife who almost got this huge national ad and they up to the very last second and then lost it.
Totally. I've had that happen to me too. I pitched a song for a $3,000 buyout for Maybelline. And I was up against like 10 or 15 other like composers that got the same, like, you know, that pitch to it. And I got in the, I got through the first hurdle. I was in the running to get, like, it was between me and like 2-3 other people in the end, and I lost it. But I was excited. and then I was like, it was good to feel that disappointment because like that's something you got to get used to, man. Is like it's not really like you know, rejection, but so much, but just, you know, it's a numbers game, man. You got to find these briefs, find these people who are getting these opportunities and pitch and just go for it and don't look back, you know?
And I think you remember, and we were doing maybe even podcasts together when I had that company in Colorado that wanted to pay me and the co-writer that wrote the song $29,000 as a buyout for using this song for their company. And they want to use it as their song's company name. And it went all the way up to the president, and then it ghosted. In other words, there was no one. It became it was a thing and a thing and a thing until it wasn't a thing anymore. And then nobody got it because they just decided not to spend the money. They probably decided to do something else. And so money, you can't count any chickens before they hatch. But it is the fastest way, because if we'd gotten that would have changed the trajectory of my career at that time, because I could have put more time in on more songs and tried to do more direct deals. And I've talked with different people. And like I said, I do have a video coming out here in the next week. It's hard to edit because the internet connection was bad. So I've got a lot of editing to do to make this thing off. But the points are real. Direct to music buyers is the key for fastest money in sync. Getting that $5,000 up front, or that $3,000 you would have got from Maybelline, that's the fastest way, versus maybe a sync payment from your library if they get one, or just waiting for back end from your PRO, which could take nine months and years, really.
Getting the direct, and I mean, you know, your the interview that you do will cover this a lot. The hustle to get those direct placements is just a whole other level, and I think that a lot of people aren't game for that.
I don't know if I am.
I don't know if I am either. It's just such a specific type of hustle that requires a lot of, like, you know, schmoozing and being in the right rooms and that kind of thing. And there's people who just play that game really well. And the power of having music supervisors in your corner is the real deal.
Or libraries, library owners who are out pitching these things, or BMG as a company who is pitching to music supervisors and saying, hey, we've got a new batch of Christmas songs. Hey, we've got a new batch of these songs, right when they need them, you know, and having that happen. People want to get into sync licensing because it's passive income. What we're talking about here with direct to music buyers is not passive. It's very active. And it takes the fun out of it, where you can just make songs and the library says, hey, we need these songs. And you're like, cool. And you make them, and maybe you get a little bit up front, but mostly it's going to be if there's stuff in the back end. And, you know, because they're a large library, you'll likely see the back end. But it's a long wait. But it's also extremely passive. You make the song, you set it, you send it, and you forget it. And you move on to the next songs. And as creators, as if we're talking to composers, we just want to make the music. We don't want to hawk it. And so that's what you really have to do to sell direct. And then the middle ground there between directly talking to a music supervisor or an advertising company is working through a sync agent, who is a person who will also take a percentage of whatever it makes. So if it makes $3,000, they'll take 25% of that. And so you'll lose 25% off the top of that, but yet they usually don't get involved in your writers or publishers at all. You don't lose any publishing. You don't lose any. And I do have an interview also coming up with a sync agent in a few weeks. So that's going to be very interesting. A lot of questions for him. And so that is going to be very interesting to find out. Cool. Because I think that is, these are things that, you know, we've been so, because we're listening to people who work with libraries like you do and like I do and like Jesse does and like Clint does and all the people and like Dave does, all the people who talk about these music libraries and how they've made a living, almost all of it, almost 95% of what you hear is talking about trying to get in with libraries. Mm-hmm. And so I think sync agents are the middle ground where they can do some of that direct work for you.
So yeah, and I'm you know what, even direct stuff can take time. I mean, I remember a supervisor got us a placement on a show. This was years ago for my band, and man, did it ever take a long time to get that that payment. It's like, oh my god. Some of the production work I've done too, the you know, it can just take a long time for companies to pay you. There's not really a whole lot you can do sometimes, you know? So,
and then
the buyouts are nice at least with Artlist, because they are relatively quick in terms of like my experiences with getting paid for things, you know?
And then we finally get to libraries, and there is just no fast library deal. I don't care if when I first got signed to a library deal, I had prepared for the opportunity, and I got the deal. In other words, I sent an email, and that afternoon I got an email back saying, "We love it. Can we have it?" So that took an afternoon, right, to get a library to say, "Yes, we want it." But I would say that music didn't get into that library for as far as signing the papers, getting the stems and everything that they needed, and getting all the kind of stuff they needed, maybe 3 to 6 months. I'm not sure if they got in there, how fast it was, but it was a while for this particular library. Of course, because a lot of these music libraries are very small. They're small staffs, 1 to 4 people. You know, they're not huge, big places. Even if they are associated with BMG or Universal or something like that, they have agreements with them. They don't have the staff from them. So I think, and after that, then I didn't get any actual uses of the songs or see any tune set uses or anything for another few months, and then probably nothing until a year and a half or so after I made that very first email. So it is a much slower thing. Even the upfront syncs that I got from being used come in, you know, twice a year. They don't really come in as the person pays $1,000 for the use of your song. It goes to, in this one library, it goes to BMG first, then it goes to my library, and then we split that, and I get paid once there's a certain amount of money to pay me. And so it's a long, long, long game, and that's why we've been trying to kind of come up with ideas about how to get to money faster here in this conversation. So,
yeah, well, you know, lots of ways to musically make that happen that don't, I mean, you know, like if going back to what we were talking about with, you know, what would I do if I had to start over all over again? I'd probably go back to like teaching guitar just to like stay in the music bubble.
Yeah.
And to maintain some regular income that can tide me over while just focusing on writing and pitching. I mean, that would just be all I would do, you know, that just be I'd be hyper focused on it, but, or go get like a job, you know, that does it, that if teaching music is going to burn you out on music, then I might go get like just a regular day job.
We have a friend, both of us have a friend in Germany who works a full-time job, and he's also writes for Artlist Originals. And I'm talking about Matthias, and and sometimes he just gets burned out on you know, how much they're wanting him to do. And he just says, "I'm going to stop for a while," and just does his job because his job pays very well. And he's not quitting his job. It pays him way more than music could ever pay him. I don't know what it is, but it's a lot. And but he enjoys making music, you know, and so he makes music and does that as he enjoys it, because he also enjoys his job. He doesn't want to quit his high paying job that he loves to go to chase music only as a career. He's not a weirdo like me. So, but all that said, I look at all of this kind of sync stuff. And again, it's because both of us aren't hustlers trying to hustle music daily. If we didn't have a goal to teach and to impart information on YouTube and through podcasts and to talk to people and stuff like that, because that was just our heart, then maybe we would be hustling like somebody else who is like just on the phone all day long and going to conferences and has an email list of hundreds, if not thousands, of contacts and says, "Here's my newest song. First one gets it," you know, and that kind of thing is really more on the artist side of things than the composer side of things. And I would imagine that we have mostly composers listening to us on YouTube and on the podcast. But for you artists out there, if you are an artist and you're making artist music, I think you might have a faster path to music income in licensing than even Steve and I do, just because we're writing things for for everything from that to libraries. And I'm mostly writing for libraries. And so the fastest way for me to make money off something is like something I put into Motion Array last month or Pond 5 last month, and I got a sale this month. You know, I got a few bucks here or there that I just put some Beethoven tunes in and they got accepted and they've been in Pond 5. And I think I've sold them on Pond 5, Audio Jungle, and Motion Array. They've been downloaded. And so I get money the next month because of that. So that's the fastest as far as licensing is concerned that I could get any money. But I think even faster is if somebody called you tomorrow and said, Steve, we need a thing for this thing and we'll give you this much up front. And boom, that's the fastest. And we'll have the check sent over tomorrow or we'll send you electronic payment tonight. You know, that's the fastest.
Yeah, that all sounds nice.
but that only comes from 20 years artist, of work.
I think that's also like a good conversation to have. It's like, if you're an artist and you don't have any interest in being a media composer, then I would forget the library thing altogether and just work towards finding music supervisors to put your music in like premium placements
or possibly sync agents and marketing companies and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're going to,
the library game is a media composer's game. You know, you have to write unless, you know, I mean, there's some artist quote unquote music on art list, you know, but even then I think that they are kind of nurturing a format that I think works well for placements. So I think it's like, it's kind of a hard one to break down, but I think, you know, there's certain types of artist music, like, you know, like a folk singer songwriter track that could work for art list. But even then, like I've sent them that kind of thing and they're like, tone down all the lyrics, you know, can you simplify it a little bit? So there is even that kind of simplification of ideas and motifs and stuff that artist music has to go through to succeed on a library like art list. But that, all that aside, if I was an artist and I have no interest in writing for a library, then man, it's supervisors all the way, 100%.
Yeah. And the person I'm talking to, she's mainly an artist. She thinks of herself more as an artist really than, and she's not composing instrumentals. She is making artist songs with vocals and rapping and stuff. And so that's going to be much more interesting to a music supervisor who needs a song for tonight's show on the CW. And so I think it's a faster road. And so if you do have your artist side, and I beg people on my channel to have an artist side, that can be the faster way for sure, I think, to music licensing success. I look at it as a long-term passive income stream for the rest of my life and retirement. You know, and other people are looking at it for, I need money now. And so the goal of this whole conversation was to talk about that. So I think we've worn it out as we normally do. So any last thoughts about this?
It's been great to chat again.
Yes, it has.
To everyone listening, man, just keep hustling. Keep hustling. Make sure to divide your time accordingly so that you're hustling as hard as you're working towards writing great music.
Yeah.
You need both those things. You need both those things, I think, to succeed in this business.
Steve just did a great video last night on that whole thing about how to like put the time into the music, but also put time into all the other things, including your health, including all these things.
Yes. And so, yes. And pay attention to your health. That's absolutely.
Today's important work thing was split up between working this morning on music and then going out and taking a long walk around the block before I did my second thing of stuff, which is about a little over a mile. And so it's nice to get that exercise happening. And then your brain gets to think about other things. So,
Yeah. I love taking walks. Doesn't always have to be like hardcore exercise, but you know, just moving the body. That's what I think that really was the point of my video that I put out yesterday. It's like, you gotta move the body.
I'm not sure I want to see that.
I've just been sitting still here.
I just get an idea that you're like for an salsa hour, dancing or something. Good. I'm like, what does Steve mean by movement? Is he like dancing? Is he like jumping jacks?
Oh, you know. Totally. What's dancing. Absolutely.
Yoga or something. All right, man. Well, good talk with you again. Thanks, everybody, for listening. That is the podcast for this week. And had a good time. Thanks for being here, man. Appreciate it.
Yep. See you next time. See you guys. Bye-bye.